I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon to start your week feeling uplifted and optimistic. Let's tap into the universal energy that connects us all. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Good afternoon and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Thanks so much for being with us today. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and this is 101.9 FM here in Vancouver on the University of British Columbia campus in the Student Union Building, or you might also be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And today we have two guests. So we're going to start out with Agneta Dick, and she is the author of Why I Canceled My Health Insurance. And she's going to be speaking at Banyan Books coming up in the next few days. So that's why she is on. And then we will also be joined a little bit later by Dave DeLuca, and he is the author of Sacred Jewels of Yoga. So stay tuned for that. So our first guest, welcome to the show, Agneta.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here, Marie.
Thank you for being with us. So you're going to be at Banyan Books. Are you doing a book signing? What's the deal?
I'm going to do a presentation and a signing. It's this Thursday, October 6th at 6:30. And for anyone who doesn't know, Banyan Books is at 3608 West 4th in Vancouver. So I will actually present the ideas in my book. I will take questions, and then I'll autograph books for anyone who would like to buy a copy.
All right, so we've got about 10 minutes before Dave calls in. So what is your book about? Why I canceled my health insurance? Why did you cancel your health insurance?
Well, actually, the first question people usually ask is, did you really cancel your health insurance?
Ah.
And the answer is yes, and in the first paragraph of the book, I explain how I, as a Canadian, was able to do that. But more important is, why would I want to? When I decided to establish non-residency and move to another country for a few years, I realized I would lose my health insurance. But at that point, I had been, for 7 years, practicing a very simple method of releasing the stresses that cause disease, and I had gone from being very, very, very sick for a long time to being perfectly healthy all the time. So I had already started writing this book, and I realized, oh, I'm going to give up my health insurance. What a perfect opportunity to go one step further and actually display the confidence that I've developed, the confidence that I feel in my health. And so that became the title of the book.
And so I'm curious, Agneta, I mean, what about, even if you have perfect health right now, what if you break your leg or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it a good idea just to have health insurance? If you're lucky enough to live in a place like Canada where it's reasonably inexpensive to have health insurance.
Right. I'm not promoting that people actually cancel their health insurance. It's a provocative title, and most people like it. But what I'm saying is that you can actually reach a point where you're absolutely confident in your health. Now, what you've referred to, breaking your leg, is what we would call an accident. And in my book, I do talk about so-called accidents and the stresses that typically cause accidents. Now, I know that can be a stretch, and most of what I'm talking about in the book is actually diseases and how we can heal from diseases and from depression and how we can also prevent illness, which is what I've done and which is what I'm doing ongoing. But accidents are also something that are caused when we're overworked, overtired, stressed, thinking about a lot of different things.
Or
so I talk about that in my book, and I don't think accidents are necessarily random events either.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, so let's talk a little bit about, so what are some of the, obviously you don't want to give away your whole book on the air, but what are some tips? What's one thing that someone can do right now to improve their health?
Well, in fact, I don't mind giving away the secret in my book, which is three little points. It's a system called the three R's, and it works for healing your body, for bringing you out of depression, and for a lot of other issues that people face in their lives. The first R is not rest and relaxation or other things that people often suggest when I do my presentations. It's more fundamental. It's called responsibility. It's basically moving away from blaming other people, situations, and experiences for your problems and for your poor health, and taking responsibility, because I believe that essentially and truly we are responsible for our bodies and what's going on with them. Now, we do not transfer the blame to ourselves. That's counterproductive. So number one, responsibility. And number two is release. Release the stresses, which basically come down to thoughts and feelings that have caused your illness. And in my book, I'm very, very clear about how you can do that. In fact, my readers report back to me again and again that my book is very specific and incredibly helpful. It shows them exactly how to do this. Then the third R is renew. As you release what is toxic in your body, in your mind, and in your life, you have the opportunity. It's like this beautiful empty space that is open, and you get to fill it with whatever you want. And wouldn't you rather have joy and peace and love and prosperity in there? Again, I show readers exactly how they can do that. And, you know, it may sound complicated, but it's very simple. It may sound difficult, but it's remarkably easy when people are motivated. I went from being extremely ill and depressed and suicidal to doing absolutely amazing things in less than 2 years. So this is something that most people can do in a relatively short period of time. And I just want to say, too, that if you invite spirit to participate in your changes, they are going to be much easier.
And so, Agneta, I'm curious, how do you get from being really depressed and suicidal? What was the catalyst that kind of brought you out of that?
Well, I think it was the first R. I had been relying on doctors and people in my life. I had been relying on a lot of different treatments. In fact, I was one of those people that was running around from one sort of doctor or a medical practitioner or a therapist to another, basically the whole week long, and I had been doing that for almost 12 years, the last seven of which were very, very painful physically and emotionally. And I finally realized nothing was helping. I just kept getting worse. And so I pulled away from all of it, and I went to that inner space, which is where we connect with our higher self. And the message I got was, I need to take responsibility. I'm the only one who can fix this. And then as I went into deeper levels of understanding that, I realized that I had, in fact, created all of these problems. And what was empowering about that was that if I had the power to create them, I could also get rid of them.
Hmm. So what is a day in your life like now compared to what it was like when you were depressed and suicidal?
Well, I wake up joyful. I wake up energetic. I look forward to what I'm going to do during the day. I make sure I spend some time during the day on my body doing wonderful physical things that my body enjoys, including eating nutritious food, doing exercise, and teaching yoga, which is one of the things I do. I spend time on my mind. I read thought-provoking, interesting books, some of which are great literature and some of which are spiritual books. And I spend time with spirit. In fact, I'm already writing another book, Longhand, which is going to be called The Celestial Body. And that is a conversation with my spirit guides, which is truly wonderful and very inspirational.
Wonderful. Well, Agneta, it has been such a pleasure speaking with you. So again, you're going to be at Banyan Books on Thursday.
This Thursday, October 6th at 6:30.
And again, what's the address of Banyan Books?
3608 West 4th.
Great.
And that's near Alma.
And do you have a website where people can get
in
touch with you?
I do, yes. Thank you for asking. It's agnetadyck.com, AGNETADYCK.
Agnetadyck.com.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Agneta, for being on the show. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Marie. Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So that was Agneta Dyck. And again, you can see her at Banyan Books. She will be speaking and signing some books and at Banyan Books on Thursday, October 6th. So you can check out her website, agnetadyck.com. And up in just a moment, we have Dave DeLuca. He is the author of Sacred Jewels of Yoga, and we'll be talking about that in just a moment. I am your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks so much for being with us today. I hope that you're having a fantastic Monday so far, and we'll be back in just a second.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts downtown at
212 Productions, Beat Street Records, Blim, Dream Apparel, The Fall Tattooing, The Kiss Store, Heart and Soul Clothing, Inc., Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematheque, Scratch Records, Vinyl Records, Woo Vintage Clothing, and Zoo Shop.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
Hello and welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and if you're interested in catching more podcasts of this show and stuff, you can always go to citr.ca or you can go to my own personal website, which is spiritualshow.com, and I recorded last week's show on YouTube. So if you want to see that, it's a little rougher on the edges, but you can go to youtube.com/spiritualshow or just go to my website, spiritualshow.com, where you'll find links to everywhere that I'm on social media and all that good stuff. So we are going to be speaking now with Dave DeLuca. He is the author of Sacred Jewels of Yoga. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you, Marie. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So, Dave, now, it sounds like the reason that you wrote this book is that everyone kind of has a different idea of what yoga means. It's a really old word. It's a really old concept. So what does yoga mean to you?
Well, it's not so much what yoga means to me. I mean, yoga has its roots in the oldest living oneness wisdom, which is the ancient Vedanta. And basically the reason, first of all, thank you for having me. I really appreciate spending time with you. The reason I put this book together is because there's so much misconception about what the oldest meaning is. And yoga is one of the oldest living religious words. And throughout the millennia, it has had different definitions. But I put the book together in one-page selections from the original yoga scriptures, so that in one-page passages, so that readers can experience for themselves the original and highest intent for the word, the wisdom, and the practices of yoga.
Beautiful. And so let's talk. I got all excited about the book, and I didn't even tell everybody who the hell you are. So
who the hell am I? Yeah. Well, isn't that the perennial question?
So what is your background? What gives you the authority to write this book of Sacred Jewels of Yoga?
I have no authority whatsoever. I mean, I'm a lover and student. For the last 20 years, it grabbed my heart and never let go. And primarily and foremost and first and foremost, I'm a devoted lover of the original Vedanta yoga wisdom and their scriptures. The most sacred and the most beloved yoga scriptures on earth are the Vedanta scriptures. The Upanishads are the most venerated scriptures in India, and they are the scriptures by which all subsequent scriptures must in some way align. All the great mystics and teachers who came along throughout India's history wrote their ideas of what spiritual growth was based on some assertions within the Upanishads that they could comment from. And then the Bhagavad Gita, which is the most beloved yoga scripture on earth. And has been for thousands of years. It is kind of like the New Testament in India. And when it was first translated into English, people like Carlyle and Hegel and Schlegel and then Emerson and Thoreau just fell in love with it. And that's where this wave of new thought came into America. First, it was the Romantic Renaissance in England, in Europe, with the folks like Carlyle and Goethe and folks like that. But then when Emerson and Thoreau got their hands on it, the Transcendentalists basically took the main tenets and revelations from the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita and put them into words for the Western world. And so the authority I have is that what I've done in this book is written a brief introduction and then put one-page passages directly from the scriptures. I claim no authority. I want people to be able to have a book where if they're never going to read the Upanishads or the Bhagavad Gita, sounds like too much or don't have enough time, they can just sample one-page selections from these scriptures and see if it resonates in their heart. And if it does, then they can investigate further.
So, Dave, I'm curious now, when I think of yoga and when people in Vancouver think of yoga, typically it's the hot, bendy girls who live in Kitsilano wear Lululemon. So what is
the hot bendy girls?
You know, you get very bendy when you do yoga.
Yeah, right? No, I love that. Okay.
So if you want to meet bendy girls, take a
yes. No, I understand. Now I've got the vivid image. Go ahead.
So what is the difference between the practice of, like, the physical practice of yoga, where you go to like a health club and take a yoga class, versus the what is in the sacred jewels of yoga?
Well, first of all, the very definition of yoga, the highest definition of yoga, the first, the oldest and most ancient definition of yoga is yoga comes from the root word yuj, Y-U-J, which means to unite, to yoke. It has the same root as the word yoke in English. And it is the uniting of the individual soul with the supreme soul. And it is very evident that that's what it is as you read the Upanishads. There is no physical aspect to spiritual yoga in terms of postures, in terms of asanas, in the Vedas or the Upanishads. Now, people can draw what they want from it, but even the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, it's only mentioned in the nearly 200 actual sutras or threads that was written by Patanjali. The asanas are mentioned maybe three or four times, and only twice really in terms of a teaching. And the teaching is sit quietly so you can forget about your body and concentrate on the God within. And that's the whole purpose of Patanjali's yoga and the Vedanta yoga, which is the original yoga. What has happened in America and throughout the world, really, is that there has been wonderful effects for the body and mind with Hatha yoga. But it is not the original intent of yoga. And there was an article when I wrote my first book in Yoga Journal way back when, around 4 or 5 years ago, and the article said, it was titled, Is American Yoga Killing Yoga in America? Meaning, because there's such an association with the physical, and the actual truth of it is yoga is about reaching towards the spiritual and transcending the physical. So it's become a very different animal, and those twisty and bendies are also very hot, and hot meaning in kind of sauna-like conditions for some of, you know, Bikram yoga, and there's athleticism in it, and that wasn't in the original, and there's also competition in it. In reaching oneness, it's very difficult. Who is it? In oneness, who's there to compete with?
Mm-hmm. Well, they always tell you when you go to a yoga class, don't compete with the people next to you, just go at your own pace. But it's hard. You can't. You see other people, they're able to do the pose better than you, and you can't help but think, well, I'm not as good.
Well, this is where the Indian way is an understanding that we all have senses, and we all have likes and dislikes, and we've been built with senses to go out and enjoy our sensory pleasure. But at some point, the senses don't do it for us anymore, and we want something higher. We want a higher pleasure. And that the senses are part of the whole identification with the body. And it's a challenge to be focusing on your body and not identify with the body. And in original yoga, that's not what the focus is. So you can look at it as spiritual yoga, which the focus is on primarily spiritual. And then you can look at Hatha yoga as primarily physical with a spiritual connection, if you should use that connection. But you won't find that connection deepened long term because of just what yoga in Hatha yoga per se, because that requires a focus on the mental and emotional states within us that hide from us the God within. And that is very a different set of skills that are necessary. And that's why Patanjali in the Yoga Sutras, which is really the Bible or of Raja Yoga, which has created the postures over time, his focus was not on the postures. His focus was on how to eliminate from our mental and emotional states those ideas, those small notions about ourselves, and those wills, those small wills towards personal gratification that keeps us from uniting with the higher within us. And it's very obvious when you start studying the Upanishads what is being called for, because it's repeated over and over again. And it just makes sense once you read it. And that's another reason that I put the book together, is because when people were finally given a taste of the beauty of some of these writings and the power, the spiritual power of them, they became enamored in kind of the way that I did, and they wanted to learn more. The ideal student in Hatha is somebody who does the postures and works on that as selflessly as possible, but also recognizes that that's just the tip of the iceberg. It's the American way to kind of individualize something and then monetize something, and and so people are trademarking yoga poses, and that's anathema to what original yoga is about. Original yoga is about union.
And so let's say someone is either thinking about getting into yoga, or they've become very bendy and they're enjoying their yoga practice, but they want to take it beyond the physical. What's the first step, aside from going out and buying Sacred Jewels of Yoga, your lovely book, what's the first step that you would encourage people to take when they're wanting to actually get into a spiritual practice of yoga as opposed to the physical?
Well, aside from the reason I would say purchase the book. First of all, I've created a website, davedeluca.com, DAVEDELUCA.com, where I've posted a lot of passages from the book. So because I believe that when you are talking spiritual, the scriptures have a tremendous power that has been built over the thousands of years of people pouring their heart and soul in it, that it's kind of like when you go into a sacred church where people have brought their love for God to that church. I don't know if you've had that experience. I had it with Sacre Coeur, and even though it's not a tremendously old church, it's just overwhelming. And some of the cathedrals that I have visited, it's not just...
Have you been to the Notre Dame?
It's not just stone and glass. There's a lot of energy left by people who loved the scriptures. And so I would say the very first step for somebody who wants to take yoga to the next level, who are not familiar with these incredible scriptures and these teachings that I tell you that are the most time-tested spiritual growth pathways on the planet. They're the oldest living oneness wisdom and pathways to that oneness known to man. They may go back closer to the last ice age, to the end of the last ice age, than we know because of new archaeological findings. So I would say, and I'm not, I feel that this is not my book so much as the book as me. So I would say go to the website, read some of the passages, and see for yourself if... And I also have places and books to read and translations that I believe are powerful that are also listed online. So do that. And if you're moved to do it, for me, the Upanishads was the first thing that I studied and ate and just nourished myself with before I got to the Bhagavad Gita. But for people like Emerson, I mean, most people know Emerson. Do you feel like the folks that listen to you know who Emerson is?
Yeah.
Well, listen to what Emerson said about the Bhagavad Gita. Remember, the Bhagavad Gita is the most beloved spiritual yoga scripture on the planet. Like I said, it's like the New Testament in India. And here's what he said. I owed a magnificent day to the Bhagavad Gita. It was the first of books. It was as if an empire spoke to us, nothing small or unworthy, but large, serene, consistent, the voice of an old intelligence which in another age and climate had pondered and thus disposed of the same questions which exercise us. Let us cherish this venerable oracle. The power of these are self-evident to people who have a unitive heart if you have a feeling in your heart that that oneness is the truth, that everything is a divine form of the divine in temporary manifestation, if you feel that there is divinity at the core of your being, this is the original wisdom that taught the world for the very first time these tenets. And if we have time, I'd like to go through the original revelations of the original yoga source scripture and maybe read a couple of these passages so your readers can see for themselves if it resonates to them, and I mean your listeners, if it resonates for them and if it was something they'd like to pursue.
I would love that. All right, so how about we take a break and then you can read us some passages.
Fantastic.
All right. So this is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we are speaking with Dave DeLuca. He is the author of Sacred Jewels of Yoga, Wisdom from India's Beloved Scriptures, Teachers, Masters, and Monks. And you can find him at www.davedeluca.com. That's DAVEDELUCA.com. And of course, you can always find me online at spiritualshow.com. Again, I'm Marie Bernard. We'll be back with more synchronicity in a flash.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are joined by Dave DeLuca. He is the author of Sacred Jewels of Yoga, Wisdom from India's Beloved Scriptures, Teachers, Masters, and Monks. Welcome back to the show, Dave.
My pleasure.
Thank you. So you were going to read us some passages.
First, let me give you a quick overview of the original wisdom of yoga scriptures, the Upanishads. The earliest yoga teachings are found in the Upanishads, and they are the final portion of the Vedas, which are India's most ancient and venerated scriptures. The Upanishad contain the oldest extant teachings of the spiritual wisdom, ideals, and practices of yoga. And the Vedanta is synonymous, the word Vedanta is synonymous with the Upanishads because it means Veda and Anta, Anta meaning the culmination of the wisdom of the Vedas. It is in the Upanishads that tremendous revelations about the nature of reality and our relation to that are first introduced into the world. The first of the great Upanishadic revelations is the reality of oneness, that the truth of this myriad world of form is that underneath all of the form is one infinite existence. The Upanishads called it Brahman, which means the great expanse or the great breath, and it means that all things are temporary manifestations of the one divine essence. And Brahman is not personal, it's not a personal god. Another way they call it is Sat-Chit-Ananda, Sat meaning infinite existence, Chit meaning infinite consciousness, and Ananda meaning infinite joy. It is the wellspring of all that is good and beautiful. And in the Taittiriya Upanishad it says this about Brahman: "He who has no form assumed many forms. He who is infinite appeared finite. He who is everywhere assumed a place. He who is all wisdom caused ignorance. He who is real caused unreality. It is he who has become everything. It is he who gives reality to all. Before the universe was created, Brahman existed as the unmanifest." Now, this is not mere pantheism. This is not just equating the infinite with nature. This is something that is so far beyond the scope of the known universe that is absolutely insignificant compared to the totality of Brahman. And another quote, these are all quotes from the book, from the Isha Upanishad, is, "Filled with Brahman are things we see. Filled with Brahman are things we see not. From out of Brahman floweth all that is. From Brahman all, yet he remains the same." He's completely unaffected by the forms that he has created, or he or she, it doesn't matter which pronoun. In India, all forms of the divine are directing, are being directed towards the one infinite existence. The old missionaries, Christian missionaries, mistakenly thought India was polytheistic, where in fact it's just that they are built on this understanding of the one infinite existence. And there is a saying, an ancient Indian saying, that Brahman assumes forms for the welfare of the devotee. Meaning that the devotee of Jesus actually does have a relationship with Jesus, because Brahman has become Jesus for that devotee whose heart is meant to love and adore with all his heart, mind, soul, and strength the image of Jesus, the divine personality of Jesus. And that's true for Buddha, and that's true for Durga or Shakti or Vishnu or Shiva. That's why there's so many different forms, because one suit does not fit all. And this is the beauty of the Vedic saying from the Vedas, Ikam Satvi Prabhuta Vedanti, truth is one. The sages call it by different names. That allowed India to say, okay, you can call it Buddha. I know it's the one infinite existence, and I'm happy that you celebrate my love for Jesus or for Ramakrishna or for any sacred ideal. Now, that is the foundation, the idea of oneness for yoga. Because yoga is a uniting with that oneness. And now the second ideal, the first introduced through the Upanishads, is of our divinity. If everything is the divine in expression, that means you and I and everyone we know and everything we see is the divine in expression. So for thousands of years, India has taught that at the core of our being is not sin, but the divine. And yoga is this movement from our unawareness of our divinity towards manifesting it more and more in our lives. So less and less of our small self rules, and more of our divine self is allowed through us out into the world in the form of love and creativity and goodness. How am I doing so far?
I love it. Yeah, you're rocking my world, Dave. I love it.
Well, this is not me. This is how Emerson felt. This is how I felt. This is how millions of people who have been introduced to this simple but profound understanding. Are you ready to be rocked further?
Yes, please.
The third revelation is that the whole purpose of life is realizing and manifesting the divinity within us. All of nature, all of life, every situation, every relationship, everything in our life is there for the express purpose of us awakening to our divinity and manifesting it fully out into the world. And everything else is a lesser pursuit, a trivial pursuit. And that brings us, let me back up. This is one of the great sayings in the Upanishads that is called a Mahavakya, which is one of the great affirmations of the Upanishads. It is in the Chandogya Upanishad, and it's Uttalaka teaching his son about his and our relationship with the infinite. This is in regards to the teaching of our divinity. And here it is from the Chandogya, one of the oldest Upanishads. In the beginning was only being, one without a second. Out of himself he brought forth the cosmos and entered into everything in it. There is nothing that does not come from him. Of everything he is the inmost self. He is the truth. He is the self supreme. And Svetaketu, you are that. Thou art that. The teaching is, we are all that divinity. Now, that is followed by this idea that all of life, in some mysterious and wonderful way, the infinite, in some poetic way in the early Vedas, it was that the infinite was lonely in its oneness, and so it created itself into myriad forms so it could experience itself from all different angles. And so now the purpose of life is for us to remember our divinity and champion it. And from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, this idea of the purpose of life is stated beautifully with this following passage. Where there is unity, one without a second, that is the world of Brahman. This is the supreme goal of life, the supreme treasure, the supreme joy. Those who do not seek this supreme goal live on but a fraction of this joy. And Marie, I can tell you that 20 years ago, before I was introduced to these this magnificent spiritual growth wisdom and pathways, I spent much more of my time pursuing that which was not the infinite. And I did live on a fraction of the joy, because it doesn't matter how many cars you have or houses you have, if you, as Jesus said, you give up your soul if you don't claim your soul. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, mm-hmm. of course. But basically, that is the pursuit of life. Now, because the Upanishads also are the source scriptures for not only yoga, but meditation and rebirth, the idea within India is, look, if you don't have enough cars yet, this lifetime is going to be all about that. Toys. Go get your toys. And when you have enough to realize that that doesn't do it for you, then you'll turn into higher forms of endeavors. And this brings us to the original spiritual psychology, which comes from the Upanishads. Once again, now we know, okay, let's assume that we agree that all of life is one, that at the core of our being is the divinity. I think everyone who's listening knows that we're not always in touch with our divinity. Would you agree with me, or is it just me?
I think we can all agree on that.
Okay. And so what causes it? What causes that? I mean, if the divinity is pure joy, why aren't we attached to it more often than not? And the answer comes in the Upanishads, in the most beautiful spiritual psychology and complete spiritual psychology ever offered to humanity. It's complete because it's been a work in progress for thousands of years. People have added, without any claim for acknowledgement, to this cumulative wealth that is this vast library of Vedanta yoga teachings. And so basically the idea here is about the next revelation is about the human condition, the makeup of the soul, and what causes our mental and emotional pain, and why we don't choose to be more united with the infinite. And this
Dave, I have a question about that.
Sure.
Because a couple, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, I went to a workshop where I had major catharsis and totally, I mean, I think many people who are on a spiritual path, we have had glimpses of that oneness. We've felt it, but it's so fleeting. You feel it and you're like, wow, I understand. I understand what life is all about, what existence is about, and that I'm loved beyond anything that you could put into words, and then it passes. I mean, why is it so fleeting?
It's so fleeting because how can we know how to fix anything if we don't know what the actual problem is?
Mm.
We're not taught that in our school system, and basically, even in our theology, in Western theology, this is not really focused on in the way that it is in these scriptures. And that's why Emerson said they have pondered and thus figured it out, those questions which still exercise us, which is that question you just asked. So if we don't know what our actual condition is, how can we fix it? So this is here is at least the Vedanta answer to this, okay? In the Katha Upanishad, there's a wonderful metaphor for the human condition. And rather than read it, it's in the book, but I will just give you the quick version of it. It talks about the chariot, and the chariot is the metaphor for our body. And the intellect is the driver, and the reins are the mind. And the horses are the senses. And the destinations are the sense objects. And the passenger is the infinite spirit. And the intellect is driving along, but he or she doesn't know that there is that the source of all joy is within them. And so his hold on the reins are weak, which is the mind. And therefore, the horses, which are the senses, are in charge. And they're taking us where they want to go. And they want to go to wherever the gratification is, wherever the likes or the aversions. They're driving away from the aversions and towards the likes, and this is all stuff of the ego. In this philosophy, self with a small s is the ego, and self with a capital S is the infinite spirit indwelling, Brahman indwelling, which the Indians call Atman. But we can call the divine self or the infinite spirit within. And there is this control that the small self has over us that continues to have us do. Have you ever done something that you knew before you did it was not a good idea?
Oh, but God, I do like a daily basis. I do that.
We all do it. We all do it. And not only do we do it on a daily basis, but we do it without knowing that we are being robotic in answering to something that's not us. That portion of us that says, go have the Haagen-Dazs, is not the infinite spirit. It is the senses that are habituated and know that they know how to take us over and have what they want. So in the Katha Upanishad, it's basically saying, once the intellect listens and says, well, what's that voice that's speaking so quietly? The spirit that is in the coach says, I'm the infinite spirit. I'm the wellspring of all joy. I am you. And the intellect starts listening and saying, I like what I'm hearing. I like this more than I like where I'm going. And then it says, I want to take you where you want to go. And it now becomes a champion for the spirit rather than the horses. And it learns how to restrain the horses, restrain the senses, how to restrain the mind and the mental and emotional states that have us do things we wish we didn't do and we know are counter to that joyous state that you experienced in your seminar a couple of weeks ago. That little, it's like the sun, imagine the sun is our Atman, is the Atman within us, and it's burning bright and it never doesn't shine. And imagine the clouds that cover our ability to see and feel and feel joy in the light of the sun are the mental and emotional states within us that keep us thinking that we're the small version of who we think we are. Swami Vivekananda, in one of these passages, I should really say this. This is one of my favorite passages in the book, and it's called "You Are the Infinite Spirit." And may I?
Yeah, go for it.
All these small ideas that I am a man or a woman, sick or healthy, strong or weak, or that I hate or love or have little power are but hallucinations. Stand up then. Know that every thought and word that weakens you in this world is the only evil that exists. Stand as a rock. You are the infinite spirit. Say, I am existence absolute, bliss absolute, knowledge absolute, and like a lion breaking its cage, break your chains and be free forever. What frightens you? What holds you down? Only ignorance of your true nature, of your blessedness. Nothing else can bind you. You are the pure one, the ever-blessed. Therefore, if you dare, stand on that. Mold your whole life on that. You are one with the eternal soul. Know that thou art he, and model your whole life accordingly, for those who model their lives accordingly will no more suffer in darkness.
Hmm. What page is that on?
That rocks, doesn't it?
It does.
I'm sorry, but Vivekananda was the spirit, the soul that grabbed me. That's on page 123.
Page 123, I'm going to make note of that. And so I think it's time for a break, and I have more questions, and perhaps there's more passages. We're getting close to time to wrap up. So we will be back in just a moment. This is Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I am your host, Marie Bernard, and we are talking to Dave DeLuca today. He is the author of Sacred Jewels of Yoga, Wisdom from India's Beloved Scriptures, Teachers, Masters, and Monks. And we'll be back with more Synchronicity Synchronicity momentarily.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and coming up at 1 o'clock is Parts Unknown, so stick around for that here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you can also listen online at CITR.ca, and you can find my website if you want more info on this show at spiritualshow.com. Today we are talking with Dave DeLuca. You can find him at www.davedeluca.com, D-E-L-U-C-A. And he's the author of Sacred Jewels of Yoga, Wisdom from India's Beloved Scriptures, Teachers, Masters, and Monks. Welcome back to the show, Dave.
Oh, thanks for having me, Marie.
Thank you. So maybe we have time for one more passage?
What do we have, 5 minutes, less than that?
About 5 minutes, and I wanted to also ask you, maybe before we go into that, I'd like to ask you, how do you start your day? Because sometimes I find that I'll be going through, I'm not as enlightened as many yogis out there, but I'll find that I'm going through like an amazing period of time where I'm having great spiritual insights and I'm feeling like totally connected and I'm aware of the oneness, and then it falls away and I wake up on the wrong side of the bed one day and it's just out the window. So what do you do first thing in the morning to keep yourself in that place?
Well, it for me, first of all, there are four yoga paths from the original yoga wisdom of Vedanta, and they're based on people's temperament. The old sages understood that one suit doesn't fit all. And so there's karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, and raja yoga. And if you're a meditator, you're going to be more inclined to raja yoga if you're contemplative in nature. And you're going to be less inclined to karma yoga, which is wisdom through selfless service. All of these yogas are about burning away the impediments to the beatific vision. And that means that realizing that when you wake up on the wrong side of the bed, what is actually going on is there is actually a selfish, the definition of self in the selfish in Eastern terminology is different from the West. In the West, it's I have a lot and I'm not giving you any, but in the East, it's anything that contracts us down to I, me, and mine. So in the Eastern definition, self-pity is just as selfish as stinginess. Because you can't, because the supreme soul cannot speak through you when your consciousness is contracted down to, I feel sorry for myself. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Okay, so I am more of a bhakti and a karma yogi. I can't really sit still, and I relieve a lot of souls when I say, you know, to those folks who can't sit still, we all know them. What do you call somebody who cannot sit still in life? What do you call somebody like that who tries to meditate? And the answer is a masochist.
Yep.
Okay? So the whole idea is sahaja yoga, which is easy yoga. Go where it's easy. So for me, I am a leaf in my mind and in my heart. I am a leaf on the river of God. So when this book was providential, it occurred through no part on my part that made it come to be with New World Publishing. I know what I am supposed to do better than I ever have before. I hear the voice in the chariot more clearly than I hear ever before, and I can distinguish or discern the difference. When I don't pay attention to the differences and I just act out, I am acting out with one of those selfish wills within my ego that captures you when you wake up on the wrong side of the bed. That's all that's happening. When you wake up on the wrong side of the bed, one of these emotional or mental states that have been in your head, you may have gotten it from childhood, we all have these and we all carry these around, has gotten hold of you and it has convinced you of what it believes to be true in life and what it wants through you and as you. And this is the power, I don't know if we have much time, but this is the power of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is, and maybe you can bring me back some other time, but the Bhagavad Gita is an allegory for this fight. And basically it's Krishna teaching Arjuna. Krishna is the infinite spirit within us, teaching Arjuna, which is the individual soul, you and I, how to come to him. And that is basically it. I don't know. I'm more mother oriented because my teachers are from Bengali, and I like the idea of the infinite presence as the female divine. But whether you think of it as he or she or whatever, the statement from Krishna is come to me. But in order to come to me, you have to fight. You have to fight these states. First, you have to realize what these states are. They're no friends of yours. That state that takes you over, and if you think about it, you'll know, you'll be able to actually put a name on the state that has you in the wrong side of the bed. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be your angry I with a small I, meaning a small personality, with a will of its own. It's not correct to say I'm angry. It is more correct to say a wave of anger, with a self-will that has no interest in your well-being. It just wants to express its anger. And it's waiting to do that anytime you relax the reins enough for it to have its way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And once we understand that, then we can first stand as a witness to it. We can say, okay, so the reason I'm feeling this so disconnected or separate or whatever it is that's causing you the pain or the suffering. By the way, all non-existential pain is induced by the ego, by the wills of the ego. I mean, if you got a knife cut, that is not induced by the wills of the ego. But if you're feeling separate in any way, or you're feeling any of the, you know, in two-ness, who is there to be angry with? Who's there to be jealous of? Who's there to be vindictive towards? So any and all of these states that cause us to lose our connection with the infinite comes from our ignorance of our divinity and our identification with the mind and the body and the senses, which do not have our interest in mind. And the Gita is about Arjuna telling, Krishna telling Arjuna to fight the tendencies of the selfish desires that are of the ego and destroy them because they are the enemy. And I'll just give you one quote. I know we're really short on time, but I'll give you one quote from Krishna teaching that's very, very powerful here. And Arjuna says, what is the force that binds us to selfish deeds? Now remember, selfish here can mean self-pity. Do you follow?
Yes.
It's not just stingy deeds. Selfish means I am feeling sorry for myself. I think nobody likes me, or any of that crazy stuff that only exists in the portion of us that's not. So Arjuna says, and this is from the Bhagavad Gita, it's on page 18. What is the force that binds us to selfish deeds, Krishna? What power moves us even against our will, as if forcing us? And Krishna says, it is selfish desire and anger arising from the emotions. These are the appetites and evils which threaten our lives. Just as a fire is covered by smoke and a mirror is obscured by dust, just as the embryo rests deep within the womb, knowledge of infinite divinity is hidden by selfish desire, hidden, Arjuna, by this unquenchable fire for self-satisfaction, self-exploitation, meaning ego-satisfaction, the better enemy of this. Selfish desire is finding a sense of mind, intellect, misleading, and burying the understanding in delusion. Fight your strength, Arjuna, controlling your senses, conquer your enemy, inspire knowledge and realization. Use by thus knowing that which is supreme, let the Atman rule ego, meaning let the spirit within rule your whole kingdom. Use your mighty arms to slay the fierce enemy that selfish desire.
Thank you, Dave. Well, I don't know what's happening with the phone line. I don't know if that's a connection going over the air or through my headphones, but I'm having a really hard time hearing you. You're totally breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, now you sound right. So what page was that passage on?
Shall I read it again?
Okay, go for it.
All right. Arjuna says, "What is the force that binds us to selfish deeds, O Krishna? What power moves us even against our will as if forcing us? In other words, what power was in bed that day you woke up and you were out of sorts? You didn't want to be out of sorts, right?"
No.
Okay, so what power is it that causes us to get small? And Krishna says, it is selfish desire and anger that threatens a person in this life. Just as fire is covered with smoke and a mirror is obscured by dust, just as the embryo rests deep within the womb, knowledge is hidden by selfish desire, hidden, Arjuna, by this unquenchable fire for self-satisfaction, the inveterate enemy of the wise. Selfish desire is found in the senses, mind, and intellect, misleading them and burying the understanding in delusion. Fight with all your strength, Arjuna, controlling your senses, conquer your enemy, the destroyer of knowledge and realization. The senses are higher than the body, the mind higher than the senses. Above the mind is the intellect, and above the intellect is the Atman, the infinite spirit, within you. Thus, knowing that which is supreme, let the Atman rule the ego. Use the mighty arms to slay the fierce enemy that is selfish desire.
Beautiful. I'm so thankful that I was able to hear it that time.
Me too.
Thank you. Well, we are out of time. So, Dave, I want to say namaste to you. And is there anything that you would like to add before we close the show?
Well, just visit the site is built so that you can taste these passages for yourself to see if this is something for you. And one other thing I would say is in the beginning, you asked what authority I had. I don't see myself. I am an instrument in God's hands. That's how I view myself, and that's where the freedom I feel comes from. But Houston Smith, the author of The World's Religions and one of the preeminent religious scholar alive, said this about sacred jewels of yoga: few causes are more worthy than that of enlightening Westerners about India's sacred heritage, and this book succeeds in doing that wondrously.
Mm.
I hope you'll give it a chance. It's not for my sake. It is for the sake of the scriptures that I am doing everything I can to have people who love yoga be able to embrace it in a deep and profound level that will add to the love they already have.
Oh, beautifully said, Dave. Are you on Facebook?
Sacred Jewel. Facebook, yes, I am. I'm on Facebook and also Facebook/ Sacred Jewels of Yoga. You can sign up for, I have a mailing list on my homepage on DaveDeLuca.com. I don't know what I'm going to do with that yet, whether it's going to be a newsletter or maybe it'll be a once-a-month question and answer. If you're interested in that, go ahead and put your first name and your email address and I'll be in touch with you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Dave. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you. Have a wonderful day.
Marie, God bless you for the work that you do.
Thank you, and you too.
All right, take care.
Bye. So again, that was Dave DeLuca. You can find him at DaveDeLuca.com, DELUCA is his last name. And the name of the book is Sacred Jewels of Yoga, Wisdom from India's Beloved Scriptures, Teachers, Masters, and Monks. And coming up in just a couple of minutes is Parts Unknown. So stick around for that here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm going to close the show with my favorite song by Ziggy Marley, Love is My Religion, because he's fabulosy. And I'm Marie Bernard. This has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. Next weekend, or next Monday, I believe, is Thanksgiving. I think I'm going to be taking the day off, so I'll be back again in 2 weeks from now, and I want to send my undying love and gratitude to you. Thank you so much for listening and connecting with me today. I love you so much. Have a wonderful week. Namaste.
Yeah. Love is my religion.